his journey through magic adventures with the Cyclops, the Sirens, with Circe who can turn men into beasts, and so on. A little island off the west coast of Greece, where, since he has been gone, and because he's been gone for 20 years, a bad situation has developed. He left his wife and his infant son at home. Nothing's been heard of him for 10 years. His wife is a very attractive woman still, presumably somewhere in her late-ish 30s. And she is surrounded by well more than 100 suitors who for years have been camping out, holding a daily party at Odysseus's house and eating all of his stuff in an ongoing effort to persuade her to marry one of them. The story starts, in fact, when events reach a crisis point when Odysseus's son Telemachus, in effect, grows up and becomes a threat to these suitors and also a threat to take over the kingdom so that the suitor won't get it as a dowry. And their reaction is to plot among themselves and try to kill her son. The point being, Odysseus has got to get home now or it's going to be too late. And again, the first half chronicles how he does that. The most famous magical episode along the way is the episode with the Cyclops, which we'll talk about a little bit more later on. And then the careful indirect approach that Odysseus makes in regaining control of his household and his kingdom, which is no easy task if you show up alone. The problem that confronts him is simply stated. If you walk into a room with 120 guys who want to marry your wife and kill your son and say, "Hi, I'm home now," the results are fairly predictable. You're going to be killed. And how to solve the problem of finding out who his friends are and who his enemies are and how to overcome these long, long odds against him are what occupy our attention in the second half of the Odyssey, a book of nostos in the Greek term, a book of homecoming. I'd like now, though, to focus on the way in which the Odyssey broadens and reconceptualizes the Homeric ideal. The ideal of arete, as its name suggests, derived from Ares, the god of war, is originally focused on, if not confined to, aristocratic warrior men. It's gendered and it's classed strongly. It is not something that everybody can achieve. Even the games, the Olympic Games and other games and contests, which appear in both the Iliad and the Odyssey, and which by the time Homer wrote had appeared in real life in Greece, were gendered. Only men competed, and often only men could watch, and were classed too. In fact, at one point in the Odyssey, Odysseus is taunted by a man who claims, "You don't look like someone who can play games." And that is to say, you don't look like someone who's upper class. You look like someone who has to work all the time. And Odysseus undresses and shows them what's what. He sure can play games so well that they learn their place. Anyway, in the character of Odysseus even, that notion of arete as predominantly military prowess is expanded. And you can see that in the Iliad even, early on, as Helen is walking the walls. She is asked at one point to point out who the Greeks are in the host, which is visible outside the walls. And she does point out the leading ones. And she points out Odysseus. And then as the discussion continues, another Trojan, a man this time, has this to say about Odysseus, which is interesting. Talking about an embassy which Odysseus and Menelaus made at which he was present. "When they mingled with our Trojans in assembly, standing side by side,
Menelaus' shoulders mounted over his friend's in height and spread. But when both were seated, Odysseus looked more lordly. So we find out, first of all, that he is bandy-legged and relatively short, as great warriors go. He's taller when he's sitting down. He's long-trunked than he is when he's standing up. But when they spun their appeals before us all, Menelaus spoke out quickly, his words racing, few, but clear as a bell, nothing long-winded or off the mark, though, in fact, the man was younger. But when Odysseus sprang up, the famed tactician would just stand there, staring down hard with eyes fixed on the ground. You'd think him, to look, a sullen fellow, or just plain fool.